Welcome back. It's Mark Steiner. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com. Now, we are going to talk a bit about what happened on Saturday. No, I didn't go, but I was there 20 years ago, but I wasn't there yesterday, or Saturday, whatever that was. This is Tuesday. But we are talking here today with folks who were there. Joining us by phone is WEA's Listen Up host, Faraj Muhammad, also member of the Nation of Islam, community activist. Good to have you with us, Faraji.
Well, thank you for having me again, Mark.
Anytime, man. You know, my door is always open to you. Malika Aminata Clements is in studio. She's a Morgan State University print journalism graduate and a freelance life experiencer who promotes self-acceptance and understanding through creative expression. Was there on Saturday as well. Good to have you in the studio, Malika. Michelle, the indie mom of comedy.
You did.
Former OSI Baltimore Community Fellow, founder of Gold Diggers, Sankofa Project, just cut her first major album here in Baltimore City, is now also in the studio. Good to have you here.
Good to be here, Mark.
And Minister Carlos Muhammad, the Baltimore representative for Minister Louis Farrakhan and student minister for Muhammad Mosque No. 6 in Baltimore and Forest Park Avenue. Good to have you here as well.
Thank you, Mark. Always a pleasure. Yes, sir.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at talkistanishow.org. Where your mosque is, where used to be the movie theater I used to go to as a kid.
I have a picture of it.
410-319-8888. Were you there Saturday? Give us some thoughts. All over my Facebook pages, my friends, people who are on our Facebook page, tons of people talking about what they experienced that day. So please write to us, talkistanishow.org, or call us at 410-319-8888. So, Michelle, let me start with you.
Mm-hmm.
So you both were there?
Yes.
You and your husband, you were there?
My husband,
the kids?
Myself, all three of our kids, we were all there. And, it, you know, at the offset, just from off the break, my husband was there in 95. And in 97, I was living in Philadelphia, and I walked from my apartment to the Million Woman March. And so we both had our own individual experiences. At that time, neither of us knew one another. I didn't know him in 95, and we had just met in 97. And so we had our own, like, lore, if you will, about what it was for me as a woman in Philadelphia, what it was for him as a African-American man in D.C. And so when we took our children, it was more – I have to be very fair about it – while we understood the history and we understood that there was a serious implication about what we were a part of, and our pastor, Reverend Willie Wilson, was the national convener, as he was in 95.
Mm-hmm.
So we had been ensconced in all of this. We'd been to the meetings at our own church, Union Temple Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., and we'd been around the 20 years in between. We'd had FaceTime with the minister, and we had FaceTime, of course, with our own pastor. And so we had all of this stuff that surrounded this whole buildup. And so we didn't know, we didn't have an expectation. You know, we went and we wanted our children to be there. We wanted them to experience what it was like to be a part of moving forward as a people. And I'll tell you, my husband was overly concerned about aesthetics. Oh, my gosh, because in 95, we had to get on the train. He had like all these little logistics that he kept, because in 95, we couldn't get here and we couldn't get there. I said, how about we just drive? And so just that small nuance was just a huge metaphor for the difference in how, you know, the experience was for us as a collective. We ended up parking, you know, just minutes away from the mall, which blew my husband away because he was there, you know. And so I know that sounds, you know, coincidental or not even maybe not pointed to some people, but it just goes to show that there is a different metaphor that kind of surrounds the whole justice or else movement and the 20-year difference. And so for me, those things jumped out right away. And I don't know that they have any great meaning to anyone else, but for anyone who was there 20 years ago, just I heard, you know, they created a movie around getting there,
definitely,
get on the bus, you know. So they created
all of this media
around getting there. And for us, the getting there was a much simpler process. So that was my first thought. That was my first thought about it.
So, Mr. Carlos Muhammad, you were there. Yes. I guess you were there in 95, right?
Yeah, I was the Baltimore co-convener. I was 22 years old in 95.
That's right, because you were on the show back then.
Yes, I remember this. So, blessed to be around 20 years later and being an instrumental part in organizing for Baltimore, also on the national level for Minister Farrakhan. But I'll say at the outset, none of this would have happened in Baltimore in terms of the local organizing efforts if it was not for Brother Faraji, Pastor Mark Montgomery, and the Millennials. Many others that we could name, but those two really held the leadership position 20 years later, as I did 20 years ago as a young student minister for the Nation of Islam. So this is all a part of the historical significance as 20 years later, we see a whole generation of millennials who now have stepped into the leadership position and have taken the vanguard position under the theme that Minister Farrakhan gave, justice or else.
And Faraji, before we turn to Malika, let me get your thoughts as well, because you helped organize this. And so.
That was Coach you just heard from.
Yes.
That's Coach right there. No, I mean, certainly it was an honor and a pleasure. And, you know, Minister Farrakhan said it himself, to God be the glory for what we saw there on Saturday. And that certainly is the case with me. I was there 20 years ago with my father and my brother, but now to be back and working in this capacity has been, an honorable and really humbling experience. And for us, it was just making sure that, I think we had, Brother Minister, we had about 4 months to really kind of get the ball moving. And I know people were like, well, is Baltimore going to do it? Let me just say, we had a beautiful group of people, young organizers, activists, believers from Mosque Number 6, and just folks from the community that came together. I mean, we went right to work. So, we haven't gotten official numbers just yet in terms of how many came from Baltimore. But I will say that the spirit in the city was certainly lifted. And as a result of what we saw in 95, it's always a blessing to continue that same tradition now, 20 years later. And then, we also want to give a big shout out to those who helped out, like Sister Eartha Harris and others who laid the way 20 years ago, because I was a part of some of the, that organizing effort as well. So this is all like an evolution, Mark. This is not like something totally different. Michelle mentioned just the parking situation, how it changes. There were certainly some nuances, but it really goes in line in terms of where we are going, progress that we're making. And it's a beautiful experience, to say the least.
And, Malika, I'm glad you're here. And so clearly you were not there in 1995.
No.
We get her mic up, please.
I was not there 20 years ago.
Okay, I'm sorry. You were not there in 95.
No, I think I was probably potty training.
But I'm curious. You've been active a lot in the community and in the streets around Freddie Gray, Black Lives Matter, and more. So I'm really curious from you almost more than anybody, just as a young person who needed to go there. Tell me what you thought about why you went and some of your reflections.
Right. I guess initially I was sort of on the fence just because I had other things to do that day. I went to a friend's store. My friend owns a store on Howard Street called Pipe Dreams. Mm-hmm. And it was like the day before, and he was like, "You're going to the march, right?" And I was like, I might go. And he's like, you have to go to the march. And I met him here at Morgan State. And we were in journalism classes together, and we, attended a march. I think that was, 2010. It was called the One Nation Rally. So we attended that, and we bonded there, and just communicating with other people who are on the same page or just having a place where all these different ideas are present. And you can find people who have your same idea, who have different ideas, and can exchange ideas and information on how to make things better. I think that is the reason why I ended up going, because I think that's important.
And I'd like to get all your reaction about what happened while you were there and what it said to you. I mean, I'm curious. I've read different things from different people about the march and their reactions to the march and being there. Activists from around the place who went, and I'm curious what you think about how this march fit into the in terms of the context of a Black Lives Matter, and that really is the movement of today. I mean, that's the movement that's grabbing the consciousness of America today. It is the movement of the moment. just like SNCC was years back, the Panthers were years back. This is the movement of the moment. So I'm curious how we all think that that march, you can start if you like, but like, spoke to and fit into the context of today's struggle.
How this march fit into the context of Black Lives Matter, I think it just talks about how humanity in general, in breaking down just the different segments and sections of the human experience, you know, like economic empowerment. Farrakhan talked about, you know, kind of boycotting Christmas or where you put your money and making sure you put it into places and people and establishments that support you and support your humanity. Talked about police brutality. So there's like all these different sections that all go under that. And I think the fact that, you know, Black people in general suffer the most in pretty much the whole entire world. Melanated people suffer the most. So the fact that all these people came together to solve these problems, we're the ones, or Black people in general, are the ones who suffer the most. So they're the ones who showed up, and other people showed up to support the cause and to see what the solutions could be.
And Faraji, let me jump in, then go to Carlos here. I mean, I know that you, and maybe Carlos as well, but Malika was the key organizer who was out in the street the whole time. You were out there a lot the whole time as well, Faraji, as were our producers and me to a lesser degree, but also out there. So, but I'm curious, again, how you think those tie in together.
I mean, this ties in exactly what needs to be. You know, I put it on Facebook one day, a couple of days before the demonstration Saturday, that if you are down with Black Lives Matter, then you should be down with justice or else. Otherwise, what are you fighting for? So it can't be this kind of call for just Black people and police and whatnot. But there has to be some end result. What is the goal that we're striving to achieve here? And what the minister did on Saturday is he didn't just talk about, and Roland Martin mentioned this morning, he didn't just talk about social justice or economic justice or, you know, any particular type of justice. He's saying justice across the board. And so Black Lives Matter starts talking about police brutality and police accountability and responsibility. But then, it just like all of these cases, it's shedding light on the systematic injustices of law enforcement, of economic, of social classes that we have here in America. I mean, it sheds light on a whole lot of other things. So this demonstration is an absolute evolution, and it's taken the Black Lives Matter movement to another level now, not just of credibility, legitimacy, but it's taken to another level of value and significance.
Yes. And just to say, you know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, despite the controversy that always surrounds him, I think that if historically speaking, we look back to 95, the minister made the call by the grace of God. It was divinely inspired, as he said. It was not something that he just had on his mind to do. In fact, he said when the words went out, I want to take 1 million Black men to D.C., he said he wished he could pull it back. Mm. Fast forward 20 years later, Justice or Else comes out in the same inspired way, and as it was in 95, the minister could have easily came up there and said, listen, I want everybody out here today to join the Nation of Islam. He did not do that because the minister has always thought for the whole. So as it relates to the Black Lives Matter movement, the minister encouraged that movement. He never saw it as something separate from justice or else, though there may have been other agendas that Black Lives Matter movement had, but that's okay. So the minister again demonstrated Saturday that he was thinking for the whole. He was not just thinking for his followers. He was not just thinking about proselytizing the movement for the Nation of Islam. And as you saw the cadre of speakers that came on Saturday, mostly millennials, and that has to be looked at. This is a generation of people that have really technically been cut off from the minister on campuses of like Morgan and Howard and the Black historical universities. So what we see now, and as the minister, I close with this, Mark, what makes it relevant is that he spent time talking about passing a torch, but how can you pass a torch that ain't lit? So this Joshua generation said, we don't want a torch that's not lit. We'll just have our own torch and light it from the fire of those that we know are relevant. And at the head of that is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So that's how that kind of fits into the Black Lives Matter movement. No separation and division in terms of where we're trying to go. I think we all have important factors, and it all can be a synergy of energies into one.
I just think it's interesting when, Mark, when you asked the question in the beginning and you brought in, you used language like SNCC was the movement at a point, the Black Panthers were the movement at a point. I don't know, it just saddens me that it becomes almost you know, nostalgic in nature. You know, it just becomes almost like, you know, fad-ish. Because I think the concepts from SNCC to the Black Panther Party to the NAACP to the Urban League, I think there is a line that runs through all of that that says all we really want is for us to have equal opportunity as a people to experience what the so-called Constitution promotes, which is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if that is the case, then there are some clear indications that every single so-called movement, if you will, spoke to an aspect of that, of a disenfranchisement of that, of, you know, a lack of opportunity for people, as you said, Malaka, so eloquently, melanated people who have just historically, in this, especially in this country, experienced a disproportionate amount of disenfranchisement and inability to access what they say we're supposed to have. And so I think it's kind of sad in a way. I get that there were names for the movements because we had to have something to identify with.
Right.
I just wish that there was a stream for, like, a consciousness, if you will, like how I have a lot of Jewish friends, you know, and I know that in their experiences, there is a consciousness that just runs from generation to generation. And then when it does seem to deviate, they do things like Birthright Israel, where they'll take a group of kids and they'll take them back to Israel to just get them almost pollinated, you know, in the consciousness.
I have my issues with Birthright Israel.
I'm sure you do, Mark, because you are the weirdest Jew I know. But the point I'm making is, and I say that with so much love and respect for Judaism, but the point I'm making is that there's a consciousness. And I think that Black Lives Matter, I think that SNCC, and as I said before, I think they all have a place that's still relevant. Mm-hmm. That's a continuum. I don't think those things have ever really been satisfied.
Well, I mean, I said what I said because, in the way I said it, because I always preach the continuum.
You do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you do.
Because
you were there for every movement. I think you're a vampire, because I promise you, every movement that ever happened, Mark was like, I remember back in 63.
That's true.
When we were down there at Woolworth on Howard Street, bussing for the rights of people to have soda. Then I remember in 79 when they cut down the tree. I'm like, Mark, were you just a resident petitioner? You were just at every movement.
Mark was Forrest.
Yes, he just kept running and running and running and running.
Lord have mercy. What did you say, Faraji?
But, I was just saying, you were the Forrest Gump. You were there for every major moment.
Exactly. I mean, I can't help myself. I wasn't there for most of that stuff. But one of the things that I think the reason I called out Black Lives Matter and the work that Malaika and other young people like her are doing in this community right now, she was an intense force out there, as a lot of young women were. We always forget that Black Lives Matter was, in many ways, pushed by young women in this community. They were at the front of all of it. And so how this kind of the style of coming to Washington and standing and listening to speeches, and that wasn't derogatory, just speeches, how that fits into where, you know, you think the movement's going.
Yeah.
I mean, because this is a continuum of a revolution that began with the extermination of Native people and the enslavement of African people in this country, and has been going on since the beginning. Mm-hmm. So, and each struggle is a little different because of the time we're in.
But I love the fact that you just lifted up the indigenous people, because that was one of the things that was impactful to me, seeing the indigenous people actually have a platform in a space like that. But wasn't it almost like it was almost like oxymoronic that he said they're only giving us a few minutes? I just thought that was just it was almost as if to say, yeah, we want your presence here, but we're going to cut your time, you know, because, you know, it wasn't that it was intentional. It just seemed like it just felt so weird.
And that's why the minister addressed it.
Yes, he did.
And the reality is, as I heard Michelle say, and it's clear that the minister likens it unto pearls that have no string. They're beautiful. Mm. They're elegant. But they're of no use if they're not on this string. And so all of these movements, Black Lives Matters, Justice or Else, and many others that are fighting for freedom, justice, and equality for our people, the indigenous movement, the black and the brown, our Latino brothers and sisters, these are all beautiful pearls that have to now be strong together and connected. And that's what the minister was really trying to get at, because it was not about Saturday. As he said, I can't take no credit for what God blessed on that day. I just made the call. But the real work began on 10/11, and we had a meeting with him and with leaders and organizers from all across the board, educators and people who are interested now in coming back to these communities and stringing these pearls together, and let's get down the road and make some effective change.
And that's why, like me personally, I don't necessarily – it's not about the Black Lives Matter movement. It's not about one issue in general. But it is whatever catches the attention of people to bring people together to one place where you can begin to solve those problems. So if you're rallying, you know, and the catchphrase is justice or else, and everybody gets together because of that, and people then begin to discuss all these different sections where there's discrimination, where things are unfair, that's the start. And yeah, I think protest, I think just having events in general is like how you do that.
Folks, join us. I'm curious, were you there? Or did you see it? It was broadcast live on C-SPAN. CNN covered it pretty intensely. Other news outlets did. But join us here, 410-319-8888. What are your thoughts on what you heard, what you saw, how relevant it is to you, how relevant it is to the struggles we have in the world here today and in Baltimore City and throughout? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkassignershow.org. Yeah, you talked about Jossie Ross was a Native brother who spoke at the at the rally, who's been a guest in the show for the last several years a great deal. He's actually in Baltimore today. And he was on the show
yesterday. I told you, Mark, you know how do you know this brother? I mean, you know everybody.
Well, because I read his writing and said, you know, we have to get this brother on the air because he's got a lot
to
say.
That's awesome. I'm being facetious, but I would expect you to know him.
And so, and I think he is representative of that new generation, like you are, Malika, like Faraji is, of the people in their 20s and 30s who are taking this next step. And they are the voices of the next 30 years, the ones who are going to be out there kind of moving the struggle forward.
I would rather have a Faraji and a Malika who are sitting at the feet,
sure,
who've sat at the feet. Like Faraji said, he was there with his dad 20 years ago, a little boy. And I'm saying that's the kind of, you know, God willing, upward thinking leadership that you want, because at least they've been processed, if you will. I'm a little concerned about the microwave leaders, the ones that just jump
microwave?
Out.
What's that mean?
Microwave leaders, the ones who just jump out the pocket, just hot out the pocket. They've been in there for about 3 minutes and they speaking for a whole generation. I'm like, dude, you need to marinate. You need to sit at somebody's feet. Malika, I'm not being facetious, but I'm saying sometimes even good energy needs tutelage, because without the right wisdom, you can really set something afire in an opposite way, in a way that's really not conducive for everybody to win. I'm not adverse to millennials getting in front. I just want you to get your face out of your text message for 2 seconds and sit and listen. Is that fair? Get your face out of the text message for just 2 seconds and just sit for a minute and listen.
I could be any of us. I'm always in this thing.
No, but I'm being facetious, because you know they always say that, you know, that the millennials are just they're the 40 character generation. If you can't get it to them in 40 characters, they lose interest.
What,
but
what
I'm saying that
what's
as a
your
critique.
Response to that, Malika?
As a critique.
I understand where you're coming from. I think though that energy, it's easier to hone energy than if there's just no energy at all, and you can't do anything with it. So people right now, they need to do something. That's what they feel. So they're attending rallies, they're attending meetings, they're meeting up with people, they're putting it in their music, they're speaking out against discrimination that they face, discrimination that other people face. So I think having positive outlets for this energy is the first step. And like, I'm an advocate of the arts to do that. So whichever way that you can take this energy and spread your message and get other people to listen to your message, like, that's the first step. I also think that right now, I don't think we should believe in leaders. Like, there's always people. We should listen to everyone. We should take everybody's story take that in as valid or just like an account of the truth, because that's all we are all doing. We're all living our own experiences and sharing our own experiences. So they're a portion of the truth. But I think it's sort of dangerous to be like, oh, they're out in the front and their face is here and they're on the radio or they're the leaders. I don't think that that's true. I think that it's a one voice of so many other voices. So I think we need to remember that in this generation.
And I think that goes back to something that I've witnessed in my 27 years of being with Minister Farrakhan, being what at that time would have been called a millennial, and putting me in leadership over a very progressive mosque at 20 years of age, which is dynamic within itself as I look back on that. But the reality is that the minister made it very clear that he would never guide, and he hasn't for 37 years. He's never guided the community or the people to a death trap. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because there were energies among the young people that was like, hey, man, we fighting for justice and we're willing to die to get it. Mm-hmm. But the wisdom of Minister Farrakhan was he would not say anything that would trigger misunderstanding and that energy. It's good energy, but it has to be, and what Michelle is saying, it has to be guided, it has to be directed. So some people, some of the older generation was like, man, the minister missed the mark. You said that in 95. But what you don't realize is that you had millennials on that mall and a Capitol Police that had to come and apologize for saying that it was going to be a race war that day. It was going to, the minister is bringing the people there to riot and burn Washington, D.C. down. So it's good to have a seasoned man like him that would not come out there and do anything to put our people, especially your generation, right, in harm's way, because you are the future, whether we agree with it or not. There's nothing that we can do about it because we're all getting older and we all have to progress forward. So, again, it has to be a synergies of energies. But Michelle is right. Here's the wisdom in what you're both saying. Elders for counsel, youth for war.
Let me open the phones here and see what people are thinking out here. 410-319-8888, line 2. Is it Disc Boone? That's what it says on the... Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Salute? How you doing, Minister Carlos?
How you doing, my brother?
Salute. Definitely, I would like to speak on exactly what Brother Carlos was just speaking on. And thank you for letting me on the show, Brother Steiner. Reason why I'm speaking is that exactly what the comment that Brother Carlos stated was that, yes, we as frontliners of Baltimore are ready and was ready as the youth, as me, myself, traveled throughout the United States to hear the youth out, as well as my elders. And yes, we are ready to die for what we believe in, to actually get the justice that we know for our babies we have behind us. I'm 41, so I do have some lineage behind me, meaning all the youth of the world. I mean, the world from here to Cameroon, Africa. So when I say this to say, yes, we had a fire in us, but I will say that day when we heard the minister, I went up there myself with, I run the Gun Nation, which is the Ghetto United Nations. I went up there with Bloods, Crips, GD, every walk of life. I went up there with PFK Sword, many other people, and we were ready. But we are the or else. And we knew we had a responsibility to listen to our elders. We listen to our elders as one voice. As the one lady said earlier, it's a line. We listen all the way from the Black Panthers, all the way down from Kemet, all the way down to the present. So it's not no leadership thing with this new generation. This new generation that I am in, we're one voice, one line, one mind, one justice. It's not no one person. We're no longer looking for leaders anymore when God has allowed us to know that we are leaders within ourselves, and the God that's with us going to make us win. Muslim, Christian, transgender, whatever piece that's out there that's a human on this earthly revelation, a new generation are no longer taking set orders. We're taking one order, and that's from that one voice from all of us, from the elders to the youth. And I thank y'all for very well being a part, as well as making that happen, Brother Muhammad. And again, I was on the lawn. For me to be on the White House lawn due to the beauty of your organization allowing the same men I just named to be on the White House lawn, and we would have never, ever been there in our lifetime, but to be able to be in that union that day, I give all praise due to Allah, Jesus, whoever, Most High, whatever one in this world conceives to be that Most High, I know outside of Minister Farrakhan, the Most High hands and mercy was on all of us that day.
Dear Gabriel, thanks so much for your thoughts. We're almost out of time, and I'm going to get another caller in here and come back to our panel. I appreciate you calling in. Richard, you're on the air. Hi, Richard, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. I didn't go this time. I was there in 95.
Watch out.
Not like you, Mark. I mean, you were there in 63 and all of that. But again, while I thought a lot of it was a powerful reminder of why we marched the first time, it would have been good, and this is like a critique in the other direction, to have been provided a kind of update of where we are from 95 to now. It would have been good to talk about infrastructure development. What do we really need in Baltimore to make Baltimore work for black folks? What do we need in this country, infrastructure-wise, to make this country work for us? And that just wasn't as clear as I thought it would be. I mean, it would have been good to have even, you know, some of our black economists, you know, present a kind of synopsis of what we need in terms of black colleges. Do we still need 104 black colleges? Do we still need all of these churches? Do we still need, I mean, that kind of information, maybe it's forthcoming. But it seems to me that we have these, you know, these marches, these events, and there's no real serious analysis of where we are, pro and con. What are the pros? What are the cons? And so that's what was missing. I mean, I would have been interested to have had a kind of overview of what we need in 50 cities in this country. I mean, he called for 10,000 black men to come back, and he made some reference as to what they would come back and do, and 10,000 black women who would come back and do some things. And again, maybe this information in detail, with detail, will be forthcoming. But we had enough time, and I'm not placing all this on the shoulders of the minister or the nation. There should have been a way, and there should be ways for us to really map out, at this stage of our development, 2015, where are we going? How are we going to get there? And I mean with specificity.
Okay, so
let me address that,
Carlos,
Mark.
Let me go back to the younger voice here in a minute.
Yeah. Well, the brother is right in this respect, but I want you to see it from another angle. No wise general puts his game plan and strategy out before the world when he knows that there are other people that are important to contribute to the action plan. You're right. Those things are already in effect. In terms of really pointing out what the issues is with black people, these millennials will tell you in the modern ages that they have access to that at their fingertips. And this is why it's not something that has to consistently be talked about on certain platforms, because if we want to know the prison population of African-Americans, we can pull that up at our fingertips. And not only that, we already know it because 9 out of 10 times somebody in our family is incarcerated. Mm-hmm. So these are things that have already been addressed. In terms of where we're going, the minister developed 9 ministries back in 2005, which are in effect. Sunday morning, we had a meeting of leaders, and that leadership will expand because that was a national situation. But in Baltimore, we got bright minds like you, bright minds of others, and we're going to get down to the job of getting this work done.
So we have about 4 minutes left in the segment. I'd like to get some thoughts before we run out of here and have to roll. So Michelle and then Malika, and we'll go to Faraji.
Well, just in closing real quick, I will say that I'm glad that my children, myself, and my husband were there. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that we had tons. And this was a great opportunity to have conversations with my 3 children, who they don't even have a title for their age group yet. They're not millennials. I'm sure they'll come up with something.
We were
Generation X, I believe.
Yes.
We're Xers. That's millennials. And then
right.
Something else. So, but just having said all of that, it was a great way to gauge the discussion about the continuum of issues that surround justice, equality, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and access. The one thing I did think was interesting at the very end was the infusion of technology. Because even in that moment, there was a call to action to text a particular number to get insight as to what we do moving forward. And so I thought it was cool for my kids to see the so-called old guard of protesting, standing, and listening to a speaker or two, and then seeing the new version of, and here's how we're going to move forward. Text this number. We'll keep you informed. I thought that was very cool.
Like
right. And I would say that protest or gathering should be the start of the movement. This should just be the, you know, the beginning. And it's a catalyst for other things. And also, this is where, like, information should be spread. There should be, like, a bunch of different organizations who are doing positive things in the community, who have their cards. They should really have tables and booths to get people signed up to all these different things. And that's how you create real change, by first having this mass gathering, and then breaking it down individually so that we all know that we have work to do at home and to continue to do the work, like, every day. It's not a one-time thing or 20-year thing where a million people gather. It has to be an everyday thing.
Faraji. Faraji there, bro?
Yeah, I'm still here. I just had it.
About a minute left.
Sure. We have this, I feel like that all that has been talked about at the program on Saturday created the perfect to be continued moment. So now where we have the same anticipation for the original, we're having the same anticipation for what's going to happen next, the sequel. And so at this point, we're looking to do some things locally, whether it's on the political side, on the educational side. But I'm looking to get involved and getting further down into making sure that our community understand that this was not a one-day moment, mm-hmm. but this is a protracted movement that's going to bring some sustainable change.
Well, this has been a great discussion, mm-hmm. and I want to thank you all for being here. You heard the voice of Faraji Muhammad, host of Listen Up here on WEA. Also, you can hear him do commentary on WOLB now in the morning. Is right? Am I right about that, OLB?
Yes, sir, you are.
Just want to put it out there. Member of the Nation of Islam. The Minister Carlos Muhammad, Baltimore representative for the Minister Louis Farrakhan, and student minister of the Muhammad Mosque number 6 in Baltimore City on Garrison Boulevard, Malika Amanita Clements, Morgan State University journalism graduate, freelance experiencer who promotes self-acceptance and understanding through creative expression. I love that title. And Michelle, the indie mom of comedy.
Former
OSI community fellow, founder of Gold Diggers, Sankofa Project, and a rising comedic star in our nation. Good to have you back here, Michelle, as
good
well.
Good to be here as well.
Thank you all. This is great.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mark.
On our way out of here, I want to remind you, let you know that we'll be bringing you some fascinating conversations with authors like Dee Watkins, The Wire's Wendell Pierce, Ta-Nehisi Coates, and more as part of our WEAA Fall Membership Drive. You have the opportunity to receive copies of their great books and many more as a token of your support for WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice community. Tune in next Monday through Friday between 10 a.m. and noon to support The Mark Steiner Show and WEAA. You can also pledge your support right now at WEAA.org. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers are Andre Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Calvin Perry, and Manif Wilson, who's working with us today. Send me your thoughts about today's show to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.